526-4000 extension 314 to speak to our membership department and become a member. This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston. Now it's time for Technology Bites.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings. Welcome to tonight's edition of Technology Bites.
Yes, welcome to Technology Bites, the abbreviated intro version as it continues to evolve. Now that Flicked has determined that it surprises me, he's taking greater glee in doing what I asked him to do so many years ago. How does that work? Welcome to Technology Bites, everybody. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Flicked.
And I'm Barrett.
And he's not here.
Nor is. Yeah, we're missing a couple people, huh?
I didn't hardly hear Peter at
all. I didn't hear Peter at all either. You got him turned up?
Yeah.
I'm Peter.
I guess he was just way far away from the mic.
Well, you know, he's in the studio, but we can't have a perfect show because that would be...
I'm in front of a microphone.
See, I'm not hearing you at all. Here, rotate these down. Barrett, give him your mic.
Switch.
Is that better?
That's way better.
Left, right.
And I can hear Barrett, too, so that's good. Okay. So, Lee is out tonight.
Evidently.
Because I think the season finale of Westworld took him down. It took me down.
But now, hold on. I have not seen it, so if we could just... There, since Lee's not here.
Some of the characters in Westworld are not human.
No! No way.
Or are they?
Romulans.
Romulans. It's always Romulans. No, it was really good. So I figure that's why Lee's not here. Plus, he had some big NASA hoo-ha.
Good news. I heard it got renewed for a season 2. 10 more episodes. Also, I thought there were more than 10 episodes. That's why I was not prepared for this to be the season finale. Otherwise, I would have been...
The fact that it was an hour and a half long.
I haven't seen it. Oh, okay. I would have made more of an effort to catch it, knowing that it was probably going to be talked about once the full season was over. I just didn't know.
I'm just happy that Comcast or Xfinity kept my... HBO, they gave me, when I renegotiated my contract with Xfinity, they threw in some premium channels just for temporary. And I was like, this is not going to last till the end of Westworld. I'm going to be, and I really, I almost thought I didn't get the last episode. And I was like, oh no. So, but I did. So I'm very happy. But now I may have to subscribe to HBO, at least in 2017 when Series 2 fires up.
Yep. Or 18. They said early 18. They're very non-committal about when it's coming out. because it's the, I guess it's very expensive to produce. And then even though it's only 10 episodes for season two, the main president guy was saying, we'll see. So it sounds like it's going to be, he's thinking more 2018.
They've themselves into such a corner that they need an extra year to figure out how to get out.
It's got to be just as good. I kind of enjoyed the episodes I've seen so far, I think, unless they really just mess things up with the finale.
Narratively speaking, it ended well. It was narratively satisfying.
Is it cliffhanger-y? Is it like, does it leave things unanswered?
It's cliffhanger-y because some serious things happen towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
But it, in no way can, it's not like, it's one of the situations where you really don't know how they're going to, okay, so they've basically said, here's the end of the season. Here's a ton of questions, but not like, you know, I mean, yeah, you'll see it. Okay. You'll know
they answer questions and create new questions.
But it's not like some cliffhangers like the season finale or the summer finale of Walking Dead was.
That's unnecessary.
That was terrible.
And then when they came back, also unnecessary.
I'll find you, Maggie. So, no, it wasn't like that kind of cliffhangery end.
Okay.
But it was like, okay, here's all the things we got you to believe, and here's some truce, and oh boy, look where it's going, and we'll see you in a couple of years.
I don't want a show quit, but you know, if someone pulls another Glenn thing, that could be a show quit.
it seems like that's a new skill that has to be had. If you know, the Lost and those others, you know, the ones where now there's a plot that overarches, you have to be good enough to hide whatever thing you're trying to keep the secret for the season and setting up for the future. I read an article that was talking about, you know, how tough it is because of the power of the internet. So you have millions of people getting together and speculating about the mysterious
people
stuff.
Probably trying to sneak on sets, probably trying to get copies of scripts. People trying to do all sorts of things.
If you think about, and at this point, cover your ears and go la la la. If you haven't heard if you haven't seen the second season of Mr. Robot, the first episode of the second season, then which aired last July or something.
Step away from your radio if you're on the podcast.
Just give us about 30 seconds and we'll be gone. It's not a huge. Basically, there were people online who guessed the spoiler situation, you know, the situation that Elliot was in from that first episode.
Right.
But it took 5 episodes of the actual broadcast
to reveal
before they revealed it. So it means that surprise, that mid-season surprise, was not so surprising.
Well, one of the reasons I think Lee is not here tonight is because many of the things that he refused to believe about Westworld came true.
Oh.
So.
Wow. Now, the election you got through fine, but Westworld, big surprise.
All right, so anyway, we don't have Groovehouse either. I think he's photographing something.
The phones were rough on him last week.
He was put on the phone duty because we've reintroduced the call-in portion of our show, and he did the best he could, and I think I think it's going to be every other week, maybe.
Yeah, it takes a lot out of him, a little breather. Capture some souls via photography, come back recharged.
But I'm happy to know that Flicted will be taking on those responsibilities. Or Pete. I don't know. They'll have to fight it out. But anyway, visit us online at geekradio.com. That's where all the information is. And now that Pete is he's taking a greater interest in the show, he's going to be updating the webpage more often. And we're going to be tweeting more often. If you're out there in Twitter land, you can follow the show. The show's official account, Geek Radio, twitter.com/geekradio. You can go follow that account. We're going to try to fire that up a little bit more. Of course, we've got the Facebook page. If you go to facebook.com/geekradio, we've got the fan page. And, of course, we've got geekradio.com. We also have IRC for all of you who like IRC, irc.geekradio.com. And that's it. When does the first Friday in January fall? I forgot to look.
Let's see.
The first Friday in January is the 6th.
Okay, good. Well, after New Year's, so we're not going to be competing or falling on the day after that. So we have a week to recover from New Year's before the next Geek Out.
Yes, this year Christmas Day and New Year's Day are on Sunday. So the Eves are on Saturday, which that should make for very interesting New Year's Eve for lots of people. They're off the whole day. That means New Year's Eve starts Friday at, like, close of business for a lot of people.
Right. That means people driving home are going to get the early starters. All right. So, yes, you can hang out on the IRC, irc.geekradio.com. Visit us online. We've got also, most of us have our own Twitter accounts. Some are more active than others, but you can find us all. All the Twitter accounts are linked on the Geek Radio page. If you look in the right-hand column, the feeds for the various hosts. I haven't seen you tweet in a long time, Barrett.
I only tweet under duress from DEF CON, more or less. That's just kind of it. I'll tweet something.
I bet if you were more active on Twitter, you would probably get more used to handling your phone and would drop it less.
Ooh, I'll have to try that. So this whole self-destructive hardware thing is just because I'm not more like Dwight and you guys on Twitter.
Except I don't really use my phone to Twitter so much.
No.
But, you know, every once in a while I will see something while driving that I need to get a picture of and tweet. I'm just kidding.
Get that selfie.
All right, I'm on Tech Bytes. I'm on Pound Tech Bytes.
Are you?
Yes, I am.
I need to see if I can get on before all the channel.
Before all the seats are gone. Although without Groovin. Well, Lee doesn't really IRC. He's too new school.
I'm on it, but I'm not going through the local network, so.
Oh, look at you. All fancy.
Well, that's so that I can access the
torrents.
Yeah, the torrents for the show. No, so that I can play the bumpers from the remote.
So in case you haven't figured it, well, so Pete has his responsibilities there. So if you were not privy to last week's show, you may be interested to learn that we have brought back the call-in segment of the show, so we are taking calls throughout the show at different points in time. And we're gonna go back to the old format and then come back into the slightly new format and then mix that up with what we think or hope will work. So we've got your feedback. Initially, we thought that going to a no call-in show was going to be the way to go and try to do a news magazine style show. And while we thought the conversations were certainly interesting and fun, what I realized last week is that I did miss the listener involvement. So if you want to participate in the show, you know, certainly we're going to be happy to solve problems and see if you've got a computer issue or something you want us to talk about and see if we can help you fix. That's great. But also, if you want to call in and just discuss tech news, stuff that you've seen go on, new products, new services, or anything relating to technology in terms of legal stuff or just commentary, we'll accept those calls too. And certainly feel free to call at 713-526-5738 when we do open up the lines. If you want to get in the queue and be ready to go online or go on the air with us with that, 713-526-KPFT. But first, the thing that will never die. It is the Technology Bytes InfoShot. Take it away, InfoShot.
It's the Technology Bytes InfoShot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right, well, we'll start with we'll go from bad news to hacking to cool new stuff that you can be excited about. That way you can kind of, it's like Westworld, but less spoilery at the end or something. Anyways, this one is sort of sad because we followed the saga of the Pebble, the kind of e-paper or e-ink smartwatch that people were pretty excited about. I mean, they had like a huge Kickstarter and all those things. Fitbit has bought them. The thing is, though, that this is not one of those where Fitbit swoops in and now Pebble's going to be rescued and expand and all that. This is more one of those like Fitbit has rooted around in the carcass and is dragging off pieces, the smaller pieces that it wants, and the rest of it is gone. Apparently, the buyout will cost, quote, less than $40 million. According to Bloomberg, and exclusively concerns software assets, which are being sought by Fitbit, quote, in a bid to better compete with Apple, unquote, according to people familiar with the matter. So they're going to give refunds on the on the stuff that people have ordered that hasn't been fulfilled. There, let's see, the Pebble 2 has already started shipping to people who funded the startup through crowdfunding site Kickstarter, but the Time 2 and Pebble Core will be canceled and refunds will be issued to Kickstarter backers, said the sources. Following the buyout, Pebble's offices will be closed and former engineers will relocate to Fitbit offices in San Francisco for reorientation and indoctrination. There's no word yet as to whether Fitbit will decide to use the Pebble brand in the future. The deal makes Pebble stock held by employees, quote, worthless, unquote, said sources. With the money earned on the acquisition going to debt holders, vendors, some equity investors, and Kickstarter refunds for the Time 2 and Pebble Core. So hopefully you weren't a big fan of the Pebble, or maybe you were thinking between that and Fitbit, and now you kind of know which way to go. This other one is like succeeding until you cause a problem. This is from Tom's Hardware, and all the articles that we're talking about tonight are on at geekradio.com on our blog. You also can find them if you like our page on Facebook. Then they show up there shortly after they're posted to the blog, and you can, you know, you can use the messaging on geekradio.com, or you can tweet at us or whatever. If you see something that you want to draw to our attention, you know, technology news wise or try by or fry stuff or any of those things, you can send them there. This one, you know, Tom's Hardware has apparently been reporting on this for a while. There was signs of a looming NAND and AMD shortage all the way back in May. And then now apparently the shortage on solid-state drive components is in full swing. DRAM Exchange reported that the average price of MLC SSDs, solid-state drives, rose this quarter between 6 and 10%, while TLC, that's the different kinds of memory stuff, also rose 6 to 9%. To make matters worse, though, hard drives got a big boost. They had the biggest quarter-over-quarter recovery in 7 years, according to TrendFocus. Now the hard drive industry, the spinning hard drive industry, is beginning to exhibit the early signs of tightened supply, which means there could be shortages and higher prices in regular hard drives as well. The deal is an increase in smartphone capacity, solid-state drives in laptops, and a terrible transition to 3D NAND led to solid-state drive prices that are unquestionably on the rise, and if hard drives also rise at the same time, it could lead to the perfect storm of overall storage prices. So apparently because of the price drops, then there are more devices that want to use solid-state drives, and because of that, then it tightens up the supply, and then that makes the makes the price go up. The Samsung Note 7 recall complicated things. It effectively removed at least 100 million gigabytes of NAND from the market, many of which Samsung replaced and then removed again. This might have been an annoyance during normal market conditions, but Samsung's already dealing with shortages, so it's particularly painful. The thing to do is watch for this, and because it's coming. I did notice just in doing some early Christmas shopping as far as memory stuff goes, at one store they had a 256 gigabyte thumb drive for like $35. You just kind of, it's like, remember when to get a 2 gig one, or to get even a 1 gig thumb drive, you had to like mortgage, you could get that for the price of a small used car, and now you can get something that has more space than my MacBook Air had as its main drive for $30. And then right next to that was a 5 terabyte backup drive, which is just for a price. Oh, it was a 5 terabyte portable drive, so it could draw juice off your USB. and be carried around with your laptop and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I don't know where it tops out. I don't know how much memory we might end up wanting to use and have on our persons at one time. But
more.
Always. Well, at some point, though, unless you're capturing all of reality around you in 8K, there gets to be a point where you could change it out every couple
alternate
of months
realities and that we're not capturing. Those are just going by. You know, the chance to watch those at some future point.
Here's $1 million idea I'm just going to give away on the air tonight.
No, give it to us first, and then
you need to be able to take those thumb drives and make them pair where you can pair them with your mobile device wirelessly, and then you can have the cloud in your pocket.
Are they not doing that with video? Like, can't you go straight Wi-Fi to your, to like a portable hard drive?
I can Wi-Fi from my DSLR camera to my phone and send files to it that way. But I can't go I don't think I can go the other way. But it'd be nice if I could, like, instead of like uploading all my photos on my phone to the cloud, if it was wirelessly went to a USB device, not a USB, obviously. Mm-hmm. In this case, it would be some mass storage, tiny little thing on my keychain and store it all there.
Because there've been a few, and none of them have really taken off, where it was a like battery recharger plus had a drive in it and Wi-Fi that you could do what you're describing.
I shopped around for one of those a year or so ago. The storage was so-so, the battery life was so-so. They do exist, but I like the idea of something very small and ubiquitous that would automatically pair with your car, with your, you know, anywhere you go. You just carry it with you. That's your data. I still don't like
that. Well,
there
was
that
whole idea of where you could take the USB stick and put an operating system on it, take that and plug it into a public computer, boot from it, and run your own OS so that you could do whatever you're going to do on a computer, but then turn it off and reboot. None of your data was stored on that hard drive with the idea that, you know, if you go to an internet cafe or some, you don't see it so much anymore, but you used to, like we go to Kava Canes back in the day, they had workstations set up and you could go use them. And if you were clever, you could collect all the information of the people who used it before you.
Well, but think about if they bring the same kind of high quality security to those devices as they bring to the Internet of Things.
Right. No,
so then if you're broke, you can just hack your phone to like store your data on everybody else's devices in their pocket.
You are now my cloud.
Hey.
Everybody's my cloud.
You're stealing my cloud.
You look fluffier than usual.
So let's see. Oh, now the malware. This one was, you know, some of it, you have to admire the creativity and imagination it takes for these hacks. Apparently, millions of people visiting mainstream websites over the past 2 months have been exposed to a novel form of malicious ads that embed attack code in individual pixels of the banners. Basically, they've named it Stegano because it's like steganography. This is researchers from antivirus provider ESET. Beginning in early October, its unusually stealthy operators scored a major coup by getting the ads displayed on a variety of unnamed reputable news sites, each with millions of daily viewers. So you're talking, you know, borrowing from the word steganography, the practice of concealing secret messages inside a larger document that dates back to at least 440 BC, although for people who were born since 440 BC, like, maybe in the latter part of the 20th century, steganography is mostly hiding data in an image so that you can pull it back out, but you can't see it. Anyways, the attack code alters the tone or color of the images, but the changes are almost invisible to the untrained eye. The malicious script is concealed in the alpha channel that defines the transparency of pixels, making it extremely difficult for even sharp-eyed ad networks to detect. After verifying that the targeted browser isn't running in a virtual machine or connected to other types of security software often used to detect attacks, the script redirects the browser to a site that hosts 3 exploits for now-patched Adobe Flash vulnerabilities. The ads promote applications calling themselves Browser Defense and Broxu, and targeted people who visited the news sites using Internet Explorer browsers. The scripts concealed in the pixels now exploited a now-patched IE vulnerability. Among other things, the checked for the presence of packet capture, sandboxing, and virtualization software in a variety of security products. So, let's see. The it would then get you to install a vulnerable version of Flash. And then you were redirected to an exploit site, which would serve one of two families of malware, the Ursniff family, made up mainly of modules for stealing email credentials, logging keystrokes, taking screenshots and videos, and acting as a backdoor, or the Ramnet variety of malware, with most of the same capabilities, but mainly targeting the banking industry. There's more to it, but the problem is this got past the ad networks and got served. Let's see, the past few months, has a lot of people gone to news sites, mainstream news sites? Yeah, I mean, it's like, talk about a target-rich environment.
It's weird on this one that they actually, a lot of the things you said they checked for and they wouldn't run the scripts, I think a lot of that was done so they would not infect people like security professionals, computers, and things like that. So people, they would know, one, not to do, not to install, not to do the things it was asking of you, and two, not to out them. So they tried to kind of stay hidden a little bit by making sure that they were running on the wilds of the unknown people, you know, people that just didn't know any better.
Well, also, they're also trying to avoid FireEye and a bunch of those other modern systems that instead of just having signatures for viruses, you know, every attachment, they'll actually spin up a VM, a Windows VM, open the attachment, see what it does, record what it does, and if it does anything weird, it'll block the attachment and won't send it on. So they're also trying to keep it from getting caught by filters, getting noticed by people who are watching filters that are actually, you know, building VMs to try to explode, you know, stuff coming in.
It's definitely taking pages from, like, you know, I think the first time we kind of saw this was when Stuxnet came up, when you had to have the absolute perfect storm of everything being there for it to kick off. And, you know, that perfect storm was that you really had to look like a machine running, you know, inside a nuclear research facility, working with, like, you know, spinning uranium and stuff like that. So it's interesting, though, because I think you could still look for checks, but, and surely you could also fake, I would hope you could fake a VM to look like a pure Windows VM without any of those hooks in there. But still,
well,
I guess it's got
to go
through
the mail. I have a feeling security researchers, if they go to a website and suddenly it pops up suggesting they update their Flash, that's real close to walking up to a cop and going, hey, you want to buy a watch? Cheap?
Police officer special.
And they look closer at what you're offering.
So with this, though, it's going to be cool because I think a lot of this stuff is going to be more hidden. You know, people are going to write stuff that says, like, hey, don't go near these domains. Don't do anything around here. You know,
these automated ad networks, though, they keep being the main vector to exploit.
And people want to sell ads, and people want that revenue coming in. And it's, you know, I'm sure that there are a lot of checks in place to make sure they're not, you know, getting bad ads. But a lot of them are aggregators, too. It's like you're not cutting the sites aren't cutting deals with specific advertisers. They're subscribing to like a Google AdWords or whoever, and then they flow the ads through, you know, some kind of applet
and
container.
It's all automated. You upload and all the other
stuff. The site owner, you don't really know. You can't, even if you were a super, super crafty admin that wanted to make sure this didn't come in, you don't really have control over what's being advertised on your site in a lot of cases.
So, you know, just another one. The main thing is informed is, you know, knowing about it helps. You should be suspicious, definitely be suspicious when you see anything talking about updating your Flash. That doesn't mean don't update it, but look at where this is coming from and how you got it. If you just, you know, went to your daily news site that you go to all the time and suddenly it pops up saying, oh, hey, you need to update Flash, that should be a red flag. If you're going to do an update on Flash, then go to adobe.com and run the updating stuff from there. Anyway.
Well, in all fairness, Adobe's had a really, really hard time keeping Flash secure. Why not trust a third party? I'm ready to at this point. This will be the last Flash update I'll ever need. Awesome.
Usually that kind of helpful updating doesn't come just because you visited a site most of the time. Anyways, now onto the, like, happy, shiny metal future. Although, you know, some of these... There's a reason it's in the news and not try, buy, or fry, because, of course, it has to get to something that could be shipped before we're going to talk about these things. But apparently, a scientific breakthrough at the University of Surrey could completely change how we charge our devices. Researchers developed a new material that could be used to create supercapacitors 1,000 to 10,000 times more powerful than conventional batteries. The new super batteries would be safer, faster charging, more efficient, and greener. It's made possible by a special type of polymer that is, surprisingly enough, adapted from the principle used to make soft contact lenses. So now you could have exploding, power-wielding contact lenses. You could be like Cyclops in the X-Men, except powering your laptop. Anyways, now supercapacitors have long been considered a superior alternative to batteries, able to charge and discharge energy incredibly quickly. However, until now, the materials used for those devices have had a poor energy density that limited their usefulness, and this polymer could change that. The groundbreaking new technology could allow electric cars to finally become competitive with conventional vehicles. The new supercapacitors could be charged in minutes, taking no longer than the time it takes to fill a normal vehicle with gasoline. It could also completely transform our household devices and appliances, allowing phones and laptops to charge in mere seconds. The development seems to confirm what Elon Musk has been predicting for years, that supercapacitors are likely the future of electric transportation. So, you know, of course, the main thing is they have to come up with something that actually ships and works. One of the things with the kind of high-speed supercapacitor charging, it means that your device, you know, if you think about it for stuff, if they embedded the chargers in the street, then your car could get charged when you're stopped at a stoplight. You could do like buses and other kinds of transportation.
Street cars,
charge
yeah.
up as they, you know, charge up at stops. When they stop at a bus stop on their route, they could juice up and basically have infinite range on that approach. So we'll see. Hopefully, you know, otherwise we're just packing more and more power into smaller and smaller spaces. And eventually we'll have something where, you know, you drop your phone and it detonates.
So we're never going to see fuel cells now that we've got supercapacitors, I'm assuming.
You got to wonder, because although there was a it's not in any of the new stuff for the show tonight, but somebody released Nikola. It's like, Tesla's already taken. What name could we have for our company? There's a company called Nikola that has a hydrogen fuel cell truck that apparently they feel is something that could be that could be useful in the and it is an awesome futuristic looking truck, I will say, if you look at the pictures. Let's see. And then
that could be Optimus Prime.
Fine. Yeah, really. But an electric Optimus, yes. With the AllSpark permanently in place. The hydrogen AllSpark. And then finally, this one, and this ties in a bit to what Jay was talking about, you know, with the sharing data to, like, devices nearby. Well, one way would be Wi-Fi, but another way would be Bluetooth. And apparently, according to this article in The Verge, over the next year, we're going to start seeing devices with Bluetooth connections that are much faster and work over much longer ranges than can currently be achieved. This should all happen thanks to changes in Bluetooth 5, which is a new standard that's launching today. So companies can now begin building and certifying devices that work with Bluetooth 5, the first round of which are expected to begin rolling out in the next 2 to 6 months and could include major products by the end of the year. There's a low-energy format. When in that format, Bluetooth connections should be able to reach up to twice the speeds and up to four times the distance of what they can today. What Bluetooth 5 devices will reach in real-world use remains to be seen, but even modest gains to speed and range would improve two of the standard's biggest shortcomings. Obviously, it's not super fast at transferring data, and it's not great at staying connected to devices more than a room away. Maybe several years just to temper some of the optimism with the new format. Maybe several years before we really start to notice any difference. First, device manufacturers have to adopt the standard, and then you have to go and buy the devices with it in it. So obviously it's not in your current phone. So until you're using a smartphone, laptop, fitness tracker, or whatever that will take advantage of Bluetooth 5. So I'll say the rumor, I bet maybe Bluetooth 5 will be in the iPhone 8. You heard it here first, folks. The new spec is also supposed to make Bluetooth beacons, the small radios that let stores and stadiums push ads and other targeted info to your phones, work more efficiently. Oh, great. So you can deliver malware to your phones more efficiently now. And it's supposed to let Bluetooth's wireless signal adapt on the fly to avoid Wi-Fi and LTE interference. Steering clear of congested airwaves is a way to help all of a device's wireless connections maintain their performance. Because that's got to help when your Bluetooth isn't interfering with the Wi-Fi on the exact same device that's trying to use it. Let's see. One major IoT-focused upgrade that won't be part of Bluetooth 5 is they're not doing mesh networking yet. The ability for Bluetooth devices to act as hubs that help one another reach farther and farther distances. Mesh networking is in the works and is expected to arrive early next year, but it's a separate technology that isn't strictly a part of Bluetooth 5. When it does come, it's supposed to work with devices using both Bluetooth 4 and 5. So there's that.
They dropped the specification yesterday. It's out there. So you can actually go, if you go to Bluetooth.com, you can download the core version 5.0. It's pretty easy to learn. The PDF is only, let me scroll here, 2,822 pages long. So super light reading, you know, get your head around
You'll
it.
You'll be able to hack into Bluetooth yeah. 5 devices before they can ship.
By the time you finish reading the spec, Bluetooth 6 will be out.
The upgrades may also help Bluetooth fend off Wi-Fi's slow attempt to move in on its low power turf. A new Wi-Fi standard called HALO, H-A-L-O-W, either that or HALO.
Depends on how it works. Let's see how it goes.
Wi-Fi and HALO is supposed to offer a Wi-Fi alternative to what Bluetooth has always been great at, fitness trackers, sensors, and other small gadgets. But that's not going to be ready for another year. So Bluetooth has a chance to get their act together.
Yeah, these things used to be, they used to be very coexistent. I like when it was Bluetooth was your low energy, low processor overhead, you know, SAN, or like personal area network, even just like very, very local. And then, yeah, or SAN. What does SAN stand for?
SAD.
Oh, SAD.
Yeah, not PAN, personal area network, PAN, yeah. Like they were talking
no,
about.
No,
yeah.
Like when someone tweeted about being low energy. And they would
oh, gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, it was sad. A little sad spec. But I really think the people that are pushing for this, or the groups that are pushing for this, a lot of them are retailers that want to be able to tell, like, hey, when you come by with Bluetooth, be able to push ads and be able to do geolocation stuff. And so it doesn't work right now if it, you know, if it goes away when you're 15 or 16 feet away. They want to push how far it goes. So I really, I mean, I hate to say it. I watch a lot of the wireless specs, and a lot of the people that were behind this and really pushing for it were, you know, the big retailers that said, hey, like Target wants to be able to tell when you're on aisle 15. Hey, let's show them a coupon for whatever, you know.
Right.
So I don't know. I think it's encroaching into Wi-Fi. And when you said, you know, they're going to, you know, kind of battle it out, there's no need to. It's like it's the older sibling, middle sibling, little
yeah,
sibling.
I don't
but
know
there's
why. Wi-Fi doesn't need to come down to Bluetooth. They need to be focusing yeah. on, you know, gigabit and multi-gigabit.
Yeah, everything kind of worked in its network. Spot, but it seems like we might, and given a few years, we might have like some specifications trying to battle it out to see who's on top. If Bluetooth wants to be what Wi-Fi is, and Wi-Fi, you know, like Pete said, Wi-Fi is trying to like go down and be low energy. So I liked how things were. I'm also not going to read the 2,800, you know, page spec, so I'll be fine with version 4.
And that's the news.
All
it
right.
Doesn't look like we have any calls on hold.
Who is that? That face looks really familiar to me. Yeah, you.
This is Wayne.
Another face.
That's Wayne?
Radio.
Here. I'm the one that promised you Fuzzy's pizza.
Oh, it's Wayne. did he make good on the promise, or did he just showed up to tell us that he's still promising?
Well, evidently he brought it.
He apparently delivered. Nice. All right.
What kind of pizza is it?
That's deep dish, the biggest one they had.
Wow, deep dish, biggest one they had, all for us. When we can't eat.
It'll be gone by the time we get out there.
I don't know. Maybe we should do the break.
We can, two things. Well, one is we can take your calls at 713-526-5738.
713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air, if you want to discuss any of the stories that Pete just went over in the news, or if you have other issues that are pressing. There's so much activity in the control room.
If we're potted up on the mini, if that's ready and working, then we could do a Christmas tradition.
Oh, Christmas tradition. Not that Christmas tradition.
Two of them. Not that song.
The lesser painful.
Christmas
this one, yeah. On Monday was Krampusnacht.
That's right.
The German, you know, the start of what you said, start of Advent.
Start of Advent.
I guess our theory in the lead up to the show was that, you know, since this is a long ways before Christmas, and then if Krampus comes and beats all the bad children, they would know it real early. Our theory is that this must be that Krampus comes and, like, lurks around, sort of like Elf on the Shelf. So the parents, that's the one where the parents can do, well, you better behave, Hans, or Krampus will know
here. When I went to Salzburg 4 years ago to go see Krampus or see the Krampus celebrations, I remember I was in a restaurant and I was talking to this woman from, she was from Vienna, and she said, oh, you know, Krampus is very real. I mean, it was presented to us as children as very real. And she told us one time, she as a little girl, when she was sitting in the living room with her family, and one of her parents was telling her the story of Krampus and how he came for the bad children, and one of her uncles or brothers or something was outside the window and scratched on the window at the time and scared the bejesus out of her. So she said, this is, you know, it's very frightening. I mean, they're making fun now, but as a child growing up, you know, the threat of the Krampus was a very real thing. And then right after she told us that story, a Krampus came into the restaurant and sat down right across from Cynthia, a guy dressed in a Krampus outfit. So it was, you know, it's all playful, and there's a lot of goofiness going on around about it. The goofiness is about to get played for you, but Krampus
Here's a pro tip for your American Krampus costume. Take an Elf on the Shelf and shred it up and put it in the teeth of the Krampus and show kind of the relative, you know, oh, the Elf on the Shelf's going to tell on you.
Yeah, versus, the Krampus is going to put you in a basket. And he's going to put you in a basket and take you away. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, Flicted will be answering the calls. We'll be happy to bring you on air. But first, enjoy this.
Let's see if it works.
If it works. Perfect show.
Here comes Krampus. Here comes Krampus. Yeah, 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 yeah. Here comes Krampus. Here comes Krampus. Yeah, 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 yeah. He will put you in a barrel, hit you with his stick. Snow is falling, holly hanging, Christmas time is here, full of Christmas cheer, eggnog and reindeer. Who's been bad and who's been naughty? You'll get more than four. Santa has a friend, black and hairy man. Here comes Krampus, here comes Krampus, yeah, yeah. Krampus, yeah, 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 yeah. He will stick you in his sack and throw it in the stream. Oh, Krampus.
And there it is. Hmm.
There you go. That begins the run up to
the one song. All right. Well, last week when we opened up the phones, we had a pretty good response. Tonight seems like, you know, maybe it was a Groove House that caused it.
Guess so. I don't know.
All the callers are out having pizza in the lobby.
713-526-5738. If you'd like to be on the air with Technology Bites, we're happy to take your calls. We have all the lines open. I had to reassure everyone last week that, no, it's not about fundraising. We're not asking you to call and make a donation. We're asking you to call.
We won't turn it down.
We would not turn it down. But if you want to be on the air, if you have a question, we had a lot of – last week was interesting. We had a lot of mobile questions, a lot of conversations around the iPhone and Android and security and stuff like that. It was kind of interesting. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. So we got about 15 minutes till the top of the hour. So while we're waiting for some calls to come in and get in the queue to be on the air with us, if they will come in, you could do another segment of information.
Bite.
So you may have heard of the iPhone 6S issue. If you have a 6S, you can substitute your own way of saying 6S if your battery is unexpectedly shutting down on you. But the thing is, this could be very helpful. Essentially, there are people who have been having some serious battery problems where it's a faulty battery and it will unexpectedly shut down on you. Apple launched a repair program, but even better is now, let's see, now you can go to, where is it now? Users can visit an Apple retail location, an Apple authorized service provider, or call Apple support with the issue. Now, where was it? Shoot. They show this Apple launches online tool to determine eligibility for free iPhone 6S replacement, the battery replacement. And then, of course, as I look into this, they don't show the link in this particular article right now. One thing is eligible devices will be able to receive a new battery from Apple on the house should they exhibit the unexpected shutdown issue. Devices must be in good working condition to receive a battery replacement. Apple won't swap it out if there's an issue like a cracked screen that could impair the battery replacement. So there's that. I guess apparently you have to go to an Apple retail store if you think your iPhone 6S might have that problem. I'm sorry. I thought that would have a link in it and that we'd be able to direct you to the right place, but no. So sorry on that one. And then, of course, cool new stuff from Apple, followed shortly after by what? Random mysterious problems with said new hardware. Well, the Mac Pros came out, 2016 MacBook Pros, and the current big issue, I think, is flickering issues. An undetermined number of 2016 MacBook Pro models are suffering from from disturbing graphical rendering issues, with owners reporting full-screen artifacts, screen tearing, flashing, random glitches, and even system crashes. Apparently, though, I don't know if this is good news or not for you, if it's happening to you, but it's related to overzealous third-party software and not a critical hardware flaw. Initial reports were unable to pin down a root cause for the errors, but sources close to the story said that over-aggressive or otherwise sloppy code distributed in third-party software is to blame. That said, a small number of users report seeing similar problems with Apple's own Photos app, which would sort of undercut it. In the case of user John Becker, who purchased a new 15-inch MacBook Pro complete with an optional AMD Radeon Pro 460 GPU. He encountered trouble and crashed while transcoding video in Adobe Premiere Pro. He took the machine into an Apple store for replacement, and then he said, this is kind of cool, he got a call from the company's headquarters in Cupertino where a team of engineers asked him to help replicate the glitch over the phone and requested access to the affected laptop for further investigation. So it seems like the 15-inch MacBook Pro with Touch Bar and the Radeon Pro 460, that particular combination seems to be most impacted by offending software. Identical reports of graphical maladies are cropping up from owners of 15-inch MacBook Pro models running standard AMD Radeon Pro 450 and AMD Radeon Pro 455 GPUs, but the one that seems to be affected the most is the kind of high-end one. Perhaps most telling are similar issues in 13-inch MacBook Pro models, both with and without the Touch Bar. Since the 13-inch variants rely on a different graphics processing system than their larger siblings, specifically Intel's integrated Iris graphics chips, that's why they think the problem is chalked up to faulty software. Because if it only broke on the particular platform, then that might be an Apple hardware problem. But since it goes across the very different, you know, the 13-inch ones only, they use Intel's integrated Iris graphics chips. Finally, Apple stated that users experiencing the graphical distortions elsewhere than unupdated software should contact Apple support or make a Genius Bar appointment for case documentation. So at least the door is open. If there's something bigger going on, Apple is investigating it and open, as opposed to the like usual where it's what Apple, lots of people are reporting this problem, Apple denies it and says there isn't a problem. This one sounds like they're approaching it a little differently. And then finally, one of the things that sort of sucked with the holidays, and I missed the show last week, and that is there was like some interesting iPhone 8 stuff came out. And so I circled back and picked it up. There's some really neat If one of these concepts that's out there made it, that would be a very compelling new iPhone. There's a picture. If you go to geekradio.com and that, then I grabbed the picture from one that was particularly interesting. The iPhone 7's only been out for a few months, but just a couple weeks ago, the Wall Street Journal reported that Apple is testing up to 10 different prototypes for the forthcoming 2017 iPhone. Now, that doesn't mean that there's just 10 phones. This is 10 different approaches to what they could ultimately deliver. So they're apparently trying a wide variety of things. I found an article at Thrillist. The strongest rumors seem to be that there will be wireless charging with the iPhone 8, and that's part of the reason why it will be glass. Several sources, including Bloomberg, have reported that Apple's currently testing wireless charging tech and that it would very likely appear in the next iPhone. Even better, the cutting-edge tech would allow devices to be recharged from far away, even from across a room.
Across a room? So you never forget to plug it in and charge?
So as long as it was in the right place in your home or office, it'd be like... Some of that... The thing I wonder about that with wireless and... You know, we'll keep an eye on it, but if it's charging randomly like that, so a wireless charger and it's doing it at a distance in a room. So you put your charger in your office or on your desk, and then every time during the day when you walk over and you're at your desk or when you're within range, is the battery getting charged up, and is that going to affect its life? I don't know if the lithium ions care
They say there's no memory issues with the new batteries. Like, you don't have to let it drain all the way down and charge it back up.
But does it count against your cycles? Because, once it's fully charged up, if you only half charged it, does that count as a full charge cycle? You know, discharge and recharge cycle? Or that's the thing I'd be interested in to find out.
Paging Elon Musk.
You know, because they do have a life in them. I mean, there's a certain... The lithium ion don't have the memory like the nickel metal hydride batteries. But they do have a certain number of charges that they'll take.
Well, if you're on the every 2-year refresh cycle, who cares?
Of course, those of you out there who buy them on the 2-year cycle where you buy the one that just got to be the cheapest, then obviously you want to know how many cycles are left in. Wasn't that part of the whole thing on Westworld, is how many cycles they could charge up the Android?
Well, I know shutter count on cameras is an issue because how many times you can actuate the shutter on a SLR or DSLR camera. So it has a life cycle.
It's like a mean time before failure kind of thing? Like
They're rated for 500,000 clicks or whatever that they're rated for, and they do wear out, especially on the SLR cameras. I don't know if the mirrorless have the same kind of issue, but the SLR-style cameras, that shutter goes up and down, and it's a mechanical piece, and eventually it fails.
So with digital, that actually becomes an issue. Because in film...
Does it report that? I mean, so it keeps count?
So some cameras do keep count, and other people just have to keep count themselves because it cycles over every, you know, I think 1,000. It counts to 1,000, then it starts over on the image, on the file naming. Oh. You can keep track of it that way, but you have to notice when it rolls over. But some of the higher end pro cameras will keep track. You can plug the camera in and you can get it from, or you can get it from the EXIF data or something about how many it's shot. But that's one of the things when you're buying a used camera, just to totally derail the the battery conversation. But if you're buying a used digital camera, if it's been used extensively, you know, you could buy one that's about, you know, you take three pictures and all of a sudden it just doesn't work anymore. Oh, oh. And that's a pretty expensive repair. I mean, I've had to have it done. I shot the life out of one SLR and I had to send it in and have the shutter replaced.
The original owner, you actually did the full 500,000 shots on that single camera?
I don't know if it was 500,000, but it was something like 250,000 or something, 200,000 shots. But, you know, I wore it out.
Jeez. So I hadn't heard about that for cameras. I mean, you know, it totally makes sense. But like generators and airplanes, they do the hours, how many hours it's been run,
right?
As a measure of life on it.
Well, there are people that get digital cameras and they set it on that like rapid fire mode because they think, oh, you know, if I take 50 pictures of something, I'll get a good one. So they go brrr, brrr. And that, I mean, you know, there's a time and a place for that feature on any camera, but all the time is not necessarily very good.
But it sounds so cool.
That's so American. If one picture would be great, then 50 will give me the perfect ultimate selfie.
It's fit like 50,000 words.
No, I mean, I understand it. Like, they do it, like, when it's, like, doing press conferences and stuff because, you know, you might get a slight bit of facial inflection or something. You know, you do. You do. You know, be careful. Don't wear it out. But if you're buying used, again, with any technology, you don't know the history. You don't know what's happened to it. You don't know. There's no Carfax for technology that I know of. So you can't tell if it's been.
Ooh, Jay's invented two different things tonight's show.
Ooh, Carfax for technology. Anyway.
We can call it notfrombarrett.com. No.
Yeah, I'm currently rethinking
the Barrettometer.
I'm canceling insurance on all my phones right now.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I think because I bought this straight from Google. I think that the phone I've got insured is not this phone, I'm assuming.
Ouch.
Which is kind of like
boy,
me.
There's a tough one. You cancel the insurance and then you find out that it was the right phone. But
I would assume it's not. I'm assuming that if you buy a phone elsewhere and bring it to your carrier, they won't insure that. They don't even know I have a new phone necessarily. Oh, then I switched the SIM.
True. Let's see. iPhone 8 stuff. We were talking about the battery. Apparently, the home button as we know it is going to go. In an effort to increase screen size without actually increasing the size of the device, the idea is that Apple will get rid of the borders at the top and bottom of the screen and have a display that stretches the full length of the device.
I'm worried that Flickton has left the room and it's coming up to the break.
He's there.
No, he's
oh,
there.
Is he
he's
there?
He's just hiding from you.
Oh.
He was kind of sleeping, but no, he was looking a little okay. A little nappy. Now, let's see, in this place, there will likely be a virtual home button. Let's see, a few other quick hits. It might have eye and face scanning technology. The screen could be curved. The idea with that is the screen will be bent on either side, much like those on the Samsung Galaxy S7 Edge. Could be glass on both sides, and it may be available in three different models. But we can talk about those more in the future.
All right, well, if you want to be on the air with us in the second hour of the show, the phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT to be on the air with Technology Bites, which is what this is, Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flickton.
And I'm Barrett.
And we'll be back after these messages and some pizza.
On Saturday, December 10th, Galveston Arts Center presents Polymer Clay Ornament Workshop with guest artist Paula Kennedy from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and a trunk show by jewelry designer Amber Tiemann from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Paula Kennedy's workshop introduces participants to the polymer clay technique of caning, which is adapted from the age-old glass-blowing process of millefiori. Workshop participants will create translucent holiday ornaments with a chrysanthemum cane out of an array of colors. Working in a variety of media such as silver polymer clay, colored stones, and enamel, Amber Tiemann will offer new and well-known pieces from her most recent collection. For more information, visit galvestonartscenter.org. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
Great music moves your heart and soul, and you can make a difference by donating something, whether it's moving or not, an old car, RV, motorcycle, tractor, or boat, to KPFT's vehicle donation program as this year comes to a close. Since 1970, KPFT has moved your heart and soul with programming that matters to you. Just call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org to help out now. Your tax-deductible donation before the new year gets you going, and it makes such a difference at the station that is the heart and soul of our community. So just move on over to the phone and call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org, and we'll make it easy to donate to the nonprofit radio station that you love. This is KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, kpft.org online. Thank you.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, and now it's time for Barrett time.
We should have talked first. There are the gentlemen are in the other room having pizza time.
Is there no Barrett time?
No, not.
Maybe
as
I should bring up the lobby mic so they can still be on the show.
Is there a lobby mic out there?
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like anything's going on.
Oh well. Nope. So I do know. Not a Veritime thing, but Flash wins the 2016 award. It showed up in 7 of the top 10 exploit kits. I think the same. Let's see. Do they know
that's,
that we're on air?
Probably got to be an all-time winner.
They're pretty high up there. Let's see. Yeah.
I mean, what would be more?
Well, so of the 10 that have been seen the most, I think 7 of them came up in Flash. The other three, I think it was Microsoft IE, Silverlight, and one other one.
Okay.
But it's, you know, if you just uninstall Flash, kick out... Well, Silverlight, I guess, powers Netflix, right? Are they doing their own codecs now? I know Netflix is supposed to do something. I'm just thinking, I don't use Flash for all that much, except for getting owned. So, you know, aside from that, you don't really need it.
Avoiding Internet Explorer...
Yeah, and I haven't fired up IE in a while. The only time I'll fire up Internet Explorer is like if Chrome and Firefox aren't doing something, and I'm like, okay, let me check to see if it's just the browsers, and that's, you know, so it gets maybe once a month I'll fire it up, if.
I saw the phone ringing briefly there. I don't know if that was somebody wanting to be on the air, but if you want to call back in at 713-526-5738, we can pay a little bit closer attention and grab that call and get you on the air if you'd like to be on the air.
Yeah, you can call. I don't know. We can certainly try and help you with if you have Christmas technology gift buying questions. We can.
What is the hot item for? This is probably more of a try buy or fry thing. But what is the hot thing? What is the hotness for Christmas this year?
NES classic or whatever thing.
That's totally gone though, and they didn't make enough, so that's
hard
not
to get them. So it's
I tell you what, you know this whole
Patch Kids.
All right, there's some phone lines ringing. That's pretty cool. Afflicted will get your name and information, get you ready for being on the air.
VR, but that's kind of high dollar.
I think it's something simpler. Like, I've picked up the buzz, and the advertising blitz is on for things like Amazon Echo.
Yeah, I can see
Google,
that.
Or Google Home.
So a shootout of home.
4K televisions, I have a feeling, are a big deal, because at least this sort of season, and then the video, you know, the platforms, people upgrading their Xbox Ones and their PlayStations to the ones that'll do the 4K.
Oh, okay.
Because those are out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. I haven't seen. You know, the thing is, I don't know if there's that much in the way of games that take advantage of the 4K yet to do it, but. I think there are people who are making that move to the kind of full 4K environment for their stuff.
All right. Well, I see that there's a call coming in. Give Afflicted a chance to get to it. There's a couple of calls coming in right now. So, they gave up. All right. Well, don't give up.
Well, someone else.
And we also, when you call in, the guy who's answering the call to get you ready to be on the air is not there to actually answer your questions and stuff. So give him the brief synopsis and let him get on to hopefully answer another call. So he's flicked. It's free now. We don't have Groovehouse here, who's our resident phone expert, but Flicked's taken.
Yeah, no, this guy he wasn't talking a lot.
It's okay. Just
that, you know, I had to get an idea, and then I had to remember how to use the software, so that took a little bit longer.
And then you hung up on him.
No.
The other call just gave up.
The other call gave up.
Oh, while you were doing the first call.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Yes. Because they called almost the same time, so.
So, no, we're not ignoring you. But this isn't a psych deal where it's like, yeah, call in.
What are you counting there?
We sit and watch.
Just a little longer. Just keep on a little
counting
longer.
The number of 4K games available for the Xbox One, of which there are now 10. Which is actually more games than I own for the Xbox One. So, I mean, if those are your 10 games, that's awesome. But I think the content is going to be slow in coming out.
All right. Well, let's take this call here. First call on the air. I'll let Barrett can bring it online
so that
Flicky can get the other calls. Who is it?
Looks like that is Tommy.
Tommy, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, sir. Have you guys ever flown drones? If so, which drones do you like? I know I don't really have a technical question per se. I'm just wondering if you guys flown drones.
I haven't flown drones. I like saying flown drones, though. It's kind of cool. But I have done some research on drones, and I think right now, in terms of hobbyist level, the DJI is probably one of the better ones.
I've heard plenty of cautionary tales about flying them indoors. You don't want to do that until you're experienced.
Unless they're the little ones that don't fly outdoors.
I have bought the first, second, the Vision Plus, and I've got the professional now. They're the four that, professional, it has sonar at the bottom, so you can't fly them in the house. I don't fly mine in the house because it's kind of stupid, but it's just me. And the four has got obstacle avoidance to where you can fly it towards a object and it'll stop.
And it'll avoid it, yeah.
Crash it.
I'm really interested in the DJI Mavic Pro. I don't know if you've looked at that one. That's the one I'm keeping.
Yeah.
It hasn't been released yet. There's a little delay in the release, but it's the one that folds up into a very portable size so that you can take traveling with you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, that's a really nice. I'm not really into that one. I'm still stuck on the Phantoms. But one thing that I do like about DJI is the repair department is they're often used. Well, I put a few used, and I've rebuilt cameras and put ribbons on the cameras and so forth, and I've had to fix a few, but if it gets to a point you don't know anything about it, you can send it in. Their service is really good.
Have you kept up with what the legal stuff is around drones right now? I don't know. I couldn't tell you, but
when somebody tells you that your phone can go, they have this thing where they think 3,000 feet. I'm sorry, 3,000 feet way above the clouds.
Yeah. No, but what about registering or having to get a license or any of that stuff?
Yeah, I've had to register mine. I did it when it first came out, and they gave me my $5 back. And the only reason why they make you register is if you run into something or somebody, they can go turn around, look at the drone, and blame somebody. But your number's on there, and it's registered to you. But if you sell it, of course, the number doesn't go with it. But it's kind of pointless in a way. It's really just a way for them to make money. I think that drones have grown way a lot more in popularity. I got into it for the hobbies because I was fascinated with the fact that I can take a 4K camera and film it 200 to 300 feet in the air and just get amazing shots. Also, like I said, if 400 feet is probably about the distance you want to go in the drone. If you can't see the drone when you're flying it, there's no sense in flying it anytime if you can't see it.
That's one of the rules the FAA puts out, too, is you're supposed to maintain visual contact with the drone, with the quote-unquote drone.
Well, there's that.
Also,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. There's a keynote. What I did was they have lights on, but I put strobes or little tiny strobes that are battery operated, and that helps me to see it. If you can't see them after that, then it's really stupid because when you get out of radio range, it will come back. The safety feature has got a return to home feature. And you can press the button, it will always come home. I use that feature quite a lot. Not that I can't see it, but I want to make sure that if I get in a situation, I won't lose it.
Right.
I usually don't.
Well, I don't know if the technology is in the other. I'm sure it is, but the when I was doing my research and I was looking at the Mavic, the technology in there for its ability to avoid objects, the sonar, the GPS, the its ability to practically land right where it took off from.
Yeah.
Is that, I'm sure that's getting more ubiquitous.
That's, yeah, it's in pretty much all of them now.
Now, I know Barrett had showed me a while back. There, do you do any of the POV flying where you're actually just...
Or FPV? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, point, that's, every drone has that now, just about DJI, all of them, and it's in 720 now. I think the Mavic maybe is 1080, but I'm not really sure.
No, I'm talking about the way, where you fly it, where you're viewing what the drone sees, and you're flying it beyond your field of vision, through tunnels, under bridges.
I use my FPV. Well, FPV is what they call it, but the thing is I use FPV, but if I can't see it, I still won't. It won't go out of my visual because you can use the FPV, but you really get kind of screwed up because if you use goggles all the time, it's great, but you can run into something that you can't see.
Yeah,
that's what I like about the Mavic. It's got avoidance all over on all sides of the Mavic. You will never get an accident with that. So they're pretty foolproof, and they level in when they fly. They'll hover at any time you need it to hover. It'll stay at one point because it's got GPS. But it's really just a lot of fun if you like photography. And I know you guys are talking about cameras, so that's why.
Well, that's what I'm interested in. And I mean, I know there's a lot of people doing it already, but it'd be fun. Well, appreciate your call and thanks for tuning in. All right.
Yeah, MIT, just make sure we hung up on them correctly. Yeah, MIT a day or two ago opened up a lab where you can actually upload any kind of drone design whatsoever. And this is mainly for hobbyists that want to build their own. And it'll actually tell you how it's going to perform in real-world circumstances, which is interesting. I also think drone is kind of a misnomer when I think of drone. And the original intention of drone programming, you know, back when they came across, was UAVs, which was an unmanned aerial vehicle, which means that you plug in, you know, you program in flight paths, you plug in all this stuff, and then when it's out there, it makes its own decisions. And that's exactly what the FAA is saying, hey, you cannot do that legally anymore. So none of us are doing it, of course. But so the home operators and stuff like that, it's much more of a, so don't think of it as a drone, really. It's much more of a very smart, radio-controlled vehicle,
The FAA is referring to it is, let's see, how are they calling it? They call it an SUAS, Small Unmanned Aircraft System.
Okay.
And so the thing about that is, you know, everybody thinks drones, they think of the thing with, like, you know, the quadcopter-looking thing and that. No, apparently this is like your remote-control airplane, mm-hmm. remote-control helicopter, anything that's, apparently anything that's between a little over a half a pound and up to 55 pounds, you have to register online. Mm-hmm. There's an online. And
it's FAA,
you need to do it. But, there is a site. So if you're getting one for Christmas,
now, our caller
flight outdoors, you need to make sure and register it.
Yeah, our caller mentioned they got a $5 kickback. So there is a small fee to register with the FAA. And it's mainly, you know, to where if your drone shows up on, you know, the front lawn of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, you know, they've got some kind of recourse. Although, if you're going to do that, you know, of course register it with your real name.
Well, the thing is the difference in rules between flying for fun
and commercial. Well, they make you can get custom designed rigs that will lift up a 4K camera, you know, HD camera. It's the real heavy cinematography equipment. So it gets kind of crazy with how big and how powerful these things can be.
But that's – oh, go ahead.
Now, I was going to say that I remember as a young person, and I've always had an interest in radio control flight but I never pursued it because it looked really hard. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, just the airplane going out to a field and being able to radio control a plane and make it fly in circles and do tricks and land was considered, you know, took a little bit of skill. But the idea of flying a radio-controlled helicopter back in the 70s, it was like one of the most difficult, I mean, of all the radio-controlled flying you could do, it was the hardest.
And it was expensive, and you would destroy your rig the first 10 seconds out.
But now with drones, these new devices, they bring all the joy of hovering like a helicopter with the joy of not crashing and destroying it. I mean, you could almost get, you know, you could, as a novice with the higher tech drones, you can get them off the ground, hovering, flying pretty easy, unless you're Lee Hutchinson, who crashes this into a tree.
And yeah, it's totally unlike, you know, the one when I think when most of the members of the show on air were young, the rocket where you'd shoot
the rocket off
and then have to run a half a mile to try and retrieve the thing after the if the parachute popped out.
My best adventure, and we'll get to this call. Please, thank you for holding. But if you want to be on the air, 713-526-573. At my best, it wasn't radio control, but my best model flight experience ever. I was probably 12 or 13 years old, and I got one of those balsa wood planes with the rubber band propeller, and we went, you know, had the little wires on the wheels, and I wound that thing up, and I wound it as much as I thought it would go without breaking. And I put it, instead of like just letting it go and throwing it, which is what you're supposed to do, I actually put it on the driveway and I let it lift itself off, and it took off. It went down the driveway and lifted off and got caught on a breeze and flew blocks away, and I never found it. It was like the best.
That's a beautiful way to lose a plane.
It was awesome because it completely lifted off under its own power and flew away. Never to be seen again. That was like whatever 75 cents or a dollar that I'd never see again. Whatever those, that price was on those. You remember buying those kits?
Oh, yeah, the balsa ones.
Yeah. And the rubber band powers was the really good way to go. The other one was my Evel Knievel, the one, the SST, where you pull the yeah, and we had this little thing in our house, the divide between two rooms, and you could do that thing and put it on the ground and let it go, and it would hit that little bump between rooms and wheelie the rest of the way into the wall in the next room.
They started making those again. I don't know if it was the actual company or if some knockoff company just, you know, just cloned them and did that, but I actually found a couple in a store last year and gave them away as gifts. And the cool thing now is that we're adults, so we can actually light hoops on fire to jump them through.
Oh,
versus
yeah.
When you were a kid, frowned upon.
Yeah, in high school, we tried with the balsa thing where we tried taping bottle rockets to it. And the person who was foolhardy enough to, like, be the one holding the plane while we lit the bottle rockets, it was kind of the Wile E. Coyote thing. Because we lit the fuses, and he, like, cocked his arm back and let go of it. It just went off and exploded in his hand. You know, so the arm back, pop, blow up the balsa, and then we were done.
All right, Barrett, who do we have up next?
Up next, we have Tracy.
Tracy, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
I lost my job this week, and I was looking to cut expenses. And I have this really expensive internet connection, and I was thinking about just dropping the thing and using hotspot in my phone for just my stuff at home on my home PC. And I wanted to know if that's a viable option.
What's your data plan on the phone? How much internet?
I do have unlimited internet. Yes.
Who's your carrier?
It's T-Mobile.
T-Mobile.
Does T-Mobile charge an extra fee for hotspotting?
No.
They did when I was using T-Mobile. I remember that I could tether my phone, but they charged me extra if I did it.
I've got my account. Now it's included. They used to with unlimited data. I would go look and read and see what they say. I know that you've got unlimited data on your handset. I'm not sure if they want you streaming everything through there, and I think that they can kind of tell. And I know
they
can
tell. I remember in
the past. They've sent out some nasty grams before.
And they tend to throttle you quickly if you're using it for.
However, if you're just limiting it to, you know, like doing email and doing job searches and stuff like that, you don't download anything big, you don't stream video, you could probably fly under the radar for a few months, you know, until you kind of got things settled again.
Yeah, you'd want to be real frugal with when you use it. So get on, check your email. Get off,
yeah. I wouldn't try to use it as an always-on. I'm going to surf Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff all the time with it. But you could, I mean, like I said, I think that they do, they may throttle, go read the terms and conditions on what they're offering, but I don't think, I haven't heard that it's a viable solution as a full-on internet provider replacement.
And they seem to take efforts to make sure you don't.
I do it at least maybe once a week in a pinch, just to, like, you know, get on, and I can VPN to my work place over my phone, check a couple servers. It's not like desktop sharing, it's secure shell, so like really lightweight tech stuff, but it does work. I just don't know how long they'll let you fly with that before they say something.
I'm pretty sure that they give you a limited amount of 4G hotspot, and then it'll drop to 3G, and you can keep using it, but it's 3G hotspot, and that's pretty slow. I mean, it's okay for mail or, SSH sessions or something. But
still, to free up some money, monthly money, and just, you know, fall back to that, it sounds like that could be, you know, a plan to save a little bit of the cash there on the monthly cable bill or whatever you're using.
Yeah, I think for the moment I better go ahead and just look for another internet provider that's going to be a little cheaper.
Well, who do you have now?
Well, right now I have Comcast, but I've got like a commercial hookup, actually.
Oh, well, I know Comcast has a pretty lightweight offering. I don't know how much it is.
Got some like high. Yeah. I want to say like 29. I know we're not, you know, somewhere in there, ballparkish.
Yeah. Same with AT&T.
The trouble is, right now I have that kind of commercial hookup, and I bet anything they're not going to want to turn around and cut that off and let me have the $29 a month deal. I mean, in other words, I bet they're not going to want to let me downgrade.
Well, unless you are in a contract, I want to say Comcast went to no monthly contracts a while ago. You can change it to whatever you want to. They may, maybe they might even, you know, cut you a deal on what you have if you tell them like, hey, this is why I'm doing it, blah blah blah. They might have some leeway to say, okay, here's a month free, here's whatever. But yeah, you should be able to downgrade without them saying much of anything. I believe it's still delivered over the same copper.
Okay, well, I'll call them tomorrow and see if I can do that then.
All right. Well, good luck getting another job. I hope that works out for you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good night. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, that's tough. That's a toughie.
Something you have to consider too, because if you're, you know, if money's tight and you're in a pinch, data connectivity and also having a cell phone or having some kind of phone line are probably the two most important things in order to search for a job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and since most people. I think nowadays it's pretty safe to say most people, their cell phone is their phone. That's their one number to be called at. So that kind of narrows it down. That gets to be a tough one. That, you know, as I'm sure I speak for all of us, that when you come to that moment as a geek where you're having to decide between things, internet connection and other things. That's a tough
internet connection versus food. Easy. Internet connection. Yeah.
I can look at pictures of food online.
You can't eat bandwidth, but you can sure try.
Get the Soylent, break out the Soylent.
Well, those are two great calls, by the way. Thanks for those calls tonight. And the phone number, if you want to be on the air, is 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT if you want to share your ideas or ask some questions of the geeks in the house. We are bringing back that component of the show where we interact with you, the audience. So if you want to take advantage of that, we invite you to give us a call at 713-526-5738. But we also have other stuff we can do if you don't call or while we're waiting for you to call. And let's see.
Yes. I was going to say, you know, he was on T-Mobile, and I just recently did a lot of stuff with my T-Mobile account because over Thanksgiving they offered some kind of crazy stuff, and I'm pretty sure that they did it because they wanted to get a huge bump in their number of subscribers, specifically number of lines that they had. And so they were doing a promotion where you could get a free line or two free lines depending on how many lines you already had. In addition to that, you could flip from whatever plan you had to unlimited talk, text, and data on all lines, And so it worked out for me, like with the number of lines I had, that I was able to flip by flipping from what I had, where my line was the only one that had unlimited data. And I was grandfathered in as they put me in for some reason for a promotion and never got rid of it. But the other lines had like 1 gig, 2 gigs, 3 gigs. So I flipped from what I had to all lines having unlimited and signed up for autopay, which dropped the price some. And I ended up paying $5 a month more for everybody to get unlimited data. And then because I had that number of lines, I was able to get 2 free lines, like no cost to me per month for 2 more lines. And you could stack promotions. And so they're having a promotion where you could get a free Samsung Galaxy Tab E 7-inch tablet where, you know, they put it on your bill and then they pay it every month over 2 years. So I tacked those onto the 2 free lines. So I basically got 2 free Samsung tablets that are, you know, connected to cell tech, right, for free. Tablets are free. The lines are free.
But you have to keep them for 2 years.
I have to keep them for 2 years, otherwise I owe them. And then, after I did that, a couple days later, we were going on a trip to Mobile, Alabama, over Thanksgiving. And, you know, I thought, this is going to be annoying because a lot of the kids that are going to be in the vehicle don't have data on their any of their devices. And sure, I could turn on hotspot on my phone, but it would be a limited amount at higher speeds and then it would drop to lower speeds and it would burn a lot of battery on my device or whoever else's device turned on their hotspot. So they had just a few days before that, they had released the, it was originally, I forgot the name of the company that made it, but it's a little device that you can plug into the onboard diagnostic computer port on most cars, and it gets juice off of that and it connects to whoever's cell. So this is T-Mobile. It connects to T-Mobile's cellular network and it reads all of your codes from your car over that diagnostic port, and it has GPS, so it'll tell you where your car is, how fast you're going, where you went, what your average speed was, how many miles per gallon you were getting. If you have any error codes, it'll tell you what the error codes are on your vehicle. When you're not at your vehicle, if it gets knocked, jarred or something, it'll send something that says there's a disturbance with your vehicle. It's kind of cool. I mean, it's some of the tech that's in some of the newer vehicles, but you know, we've got like a mid-2000 minivan, so didn't have that. So that was kind of cool, and also in addition to that, it's a hotspot. So I signed up for like 6 gig of data on the hotspot, right? So we're driving down the interstate going to Mobile, and I've got a Wi-Fi hotspot like in my car going along with me, with 6 gigs of high speed, you know, 4G LTE data. And so, you know, basically they were able to watch movies and stream Netflix and stuff on their Wi-Fi only devices in the car on the trip there and back.
And I didn't, you know, an alternative that it sounds like you had a great, you know, you worked out, you solved the problem. But now I believe Netflix is offering where you can download stuff.
Yeah,
to
they
watch.
Just today, started that like a few days ago. Yeah, but this was pretty cool. And the other thing was, I got that in a promotion period where I got the device for free, as long as I keep it for 2 years, and I can have any data plan. So I got the 6 gig, which is a little more expensive, but I can drop down to the 2 gig and it's like 10 a month or something. So anyway,
so
I thought it was kind of a cool device.
To go in the minivan now. They want to take the minivan instead of being embarrassed to be in it. They want to
be able to watch their shows.
Running through the fine print on the T-Mobile stuff for tracing, it looks like most of the plans come with 7 gigabytes of high-speed smartphone mobile hotspot service. So 7 gigs of tethering before they'll even start thinking about ratcheting you down.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're 7 gigs is a decent amount of data. You can do quite a bit as long as you don't.
You can
buy
on that if you had to, although you can see where it's mostly aimed at the, oh, you know, I'm stuck somewhere and I need to get you know, half an hour of
it's
data.
You chew through 7 gig a lot faster, depending on what you do. Because, you know, for a while when I bought my new house, I didn't want to get internet yet because I was trying to wait for a few months until everything kind of fell together and consolidating plans, you know, getting married. And so I was like, ooh, I'll just get, I think it was Freedom Pop. I'm like, oh, I'll just get this Freedom Pop, like, that connects, I think it was Sprint's network is who they subsold through. You know, and it was like 10 gig. You get 10 gig, it's like 20, it was like $20 or $30 a month. And I'm like, oh, this will be awesome. Like, I can't watch Netflix and stuff a lot. But you know, I mean, I can do email and all that stuff. So I just hooked it up, and like, this is my home router now. Like, this is how I get on the internet. But I kind of forgot that I had, like, cron jobs that did, like, server backups to my home system.
Ooh, that could suck me fast.
I burned through that 10 gig.
I hope,
like,
you were using rsync.
2.5 days. It was using rsync, but, yeah, but it was still, there was a lot of stuff changing, and I burned through it really fast.
So I'm looking. I use my phone a decent amount, but I thought I didn't use it that much. I've already burned through 2 gigs of pure data and then another 4 gigs of what they're calling on-network data, which is all, I guess, all the updates. They T-Mobile they don't count a lot of services against you.
There's a lot of streaming video and streaming audio that they don't count,
which is kind of nice. But yeah, so 2 gigs in just a few weeks, and I don't really use mine for much.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We've got about half an hour left in the show, and we've got plenty of open lines right now. So if you want to participate in tonight's program, we invite you to do so. We know it's scary getting back into the call-in waters. You know, put your toe in. But if you, I like that drone call, and I thought that this conversation about the cellular data as a possible internet replacement conversation
now,
was useful.
If the drone operator could duct tape his cell phone to the drone, fly it over to Tracy's place, shower him with some free Wi-Fi until he finds a job, that would really be us kind of...
Yeah,
for
however long the battery lasts on one of those things.
And that's my whole thing. I was kind of against the registration thing. You know, I don't want to go after register everything with the FAA and have people like that. But like Jay Lee said, I also don't want like a 50-pound camera rig falling out of the sky and, you know, crushing my cell phone. So there is,
well,
you know, there's
the
a call for some liability.
Getting smart enough to know, it's like, I think it knows that my battery's at a certain level, I'm going to land now.
I think it does do that, but we're getting so many out there, and, you know, eventually you're going to have, you know, you're going to have a bum drone, you're going to have something that's going to come down, I would assume, in a populated area. Because,
well,
you know, you build 1,000 of them, one's going to be defective.
I just wonder, like, you know, as I do, you know, I remember when I went to Iceland, I was at one really scenic spot. And I was really enjoying being there and taking pictures and stuff. And there was a guy that was trying, you know, getting a drone launch there. And I can see a future where, you know, some cool landmark is just going to be, instead of just the crowd on the ground.
178 drones.
Drones all in the shot, you know. How do you get, I can't get a single shot without a drone in it.
The big ones are really loud, too. That's one of the things, too. It's like your places where you might want to go out that might be of scenic, you know, value, where it's just nice not to hear, you know.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. Or, you know, where you see people getting in line, you know, to, like, you know, take shots of famous things. There could be lines of people waiting to launch your drones.
Oh, there's actually, there was actually a, you know, there was a sign when we were in New Zealand for Franz Josef Glacier, and there was a hiking trail. And at the entrance of the hiking trail, they had a sign up, and it said no dogs and no drones. And it had an outline of a DJI.
Drone wars have.
All right, well, I see some lines. Regan Flick is getting those. So let's see what we've got here. That's awesome. 713-526-5738. Remember, the call screener is there just to get you a little prep to be on the air. So I see another call coming in. So if you keep bringing, Flick is going to get to you in just a second. As soon as he gives us the information on this call, we'll throw it on the air. All right, we got no name, but he got both answered. That's cool. Flick is getting good at this.
Triage, yeah. We don't need. We still need Groovehouse.
No, I mean,
our reliance on Groovehouse is great.
It is great. We miss them dearly. You know, I'm thinking about getting a drone to take on travel. And this one that I was looking at, the Mavic, it looks pretty cool. My fear is I'll take, you know, $1,000 worth of technology, throw it up in the air, and never see it again.
Well, turn it on first and don't. Use your balsa wood launch from the ground technique.
I can see it, Jay's. Does the first delicate takeoff, and then a balsa wood plane comes out of nowhere.
Bam! Wow, something's going on weird with the phones. I don't know what's exactly happening. All right, why don't we do this? Do we have another segment we can do while we're waiting to get a call?
We can start it up and then move to calls.
All right, 713-526-5738.
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can and they stand a dip in the snark tank.
I have a few different items, and we'll start with one and then see from there on calls. One of the things that Oculus, you know, the Oculus Rift is a big deal in the VR world, and one of the things that's been an issue kind of all around is, if you read any reviews of the VR setups, is the motion controls. You know, the controllers to move around and handle stuff. Well, Oculus has now come out with their controls, and Wired has a review on them. Let's see. It says, you know, you can use the Xbox One controller that's packed in the box, but that's kind of, you know, that's sort of weird to be wearing the helmet thing and then having to operate the joystick type deal. Oculus now has motion controllers. Apparently, they're very late to the party. Vive shipped with two motion controllers, and PlayStation's Move controllers, that's the same ones they had back for their like little kind of camera Kinect thing. So theirs look kind of weird. It's called the Oculus Touch. It tracks the position of your hands in 3D space. To do this, you have to set up a second camera that's included in the box and connected via a USB cable. It's identical to the tracking camera that came with the Rift, and you can set the pair of them up to each side of your monitor, move the controller, move your hands. Then it gets a little different. Touch tracks the gross positioning of your fingers, too, without the need to press buttons. Give a thumbs up, and your virtual hand gives a thumbs up. Point with your index finger, and you point in the game. According to Wired, it's pretty satisfying to reach out and press a tiny virtual button with an outstretched finger rather than manipulating your whole hand like a club. I don't know if you've seen any online. There's some of the YouTubers do demos with virtual, and especially, of course, they really like to review the really, really crappy, cheap ones. And the virtual stuff, you just sort of wave your hands around to mess with it. But so Oculus has got something that sounds pretty serious. You can't move your fingers individually. It's not tracking your other three fingers, but it does give you thumb and pointer finger. And apparently it's much more natural when you slip it on your hand. You don't have to grip it in order for it to stay on there. So it kind of balances on your fingers and palm. And then you can, you know, so you can do more stuff that, where it feels more natural with your hands. On the face of each handheld unit is a standard gaming thumbstick and three buttons, all of which are easily reachable with your thumb. You know, you can go to geekradio.com and read more about it. But apparently this one is a good step forward. It's the headset is part of VR.
Right.
But having good controls that let you do
to interact in the space. Yeah, absolutely.
Is really important. And so, you know, the thing is, they say the Touch is just another mile marker on that road, and they'll probably be obsolete soon enough. In the meantime, they say it's the most natural and versatile VR control experience available.
Does muddy the waters, because Lee and I've got a couple people that work in the office with me, they're really into VR, and they were saying the Vive, or however you say it, Viva, was the one to go to. But now with this kind of makes Oculus
like
really compelling again.
One-ups
All right. Well, we got a couple of calls in the queue, and we're going to interrupt the try, buy, or fry, and we'll see what somebody has. So let's go to line one first. Who is it?
That's Mark.
Mark, you're on the air with Technology Bites. Are you there, Mark?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can.
Okay, so my question is, I wanted to get a gift for my son who's in college for Christmas.
Yeah.
What's a good tech gift to get for him?
What does he have now in terms of technology? Is he an Apple fan or a Windows fan, or does he have a laptop? What has he got?
Yeah, he has a 4K laptop that he uses for gaming.
Okay, so a new laptop probably is not on the... What
are you looking for, like, is your big budget, small budget, like something tiny and geeky, or something like, you know, VR?
Oh, it
could
be a big gift.
A big one?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, like, you're saying VR, so how much would that be?
I was half kidding, but I mean, if you want to, you know, go spend some money on VR, I'm sure your college-age son is not going to be disappointed in that.
Okay.
Well, you know, I just think
thousands of dollars, and that's probably not the
No, we're right talking now. Hundreds, you know, like high hundreds, okay. Three figures. If we, you know, if you were to go with what Pete just mentioned and actually get, you know, the Oculus Rift with the hand controllers, it's still under four figures.
And you can connect that up to the laptop.
Yeah, you connect up to the gaming PC, if I'm assuming it's a Windows PC, and be good to go, and then a whole new realm of gaming. Now, he may drop out of college and enter into virtual worlds, and you may never see him again. So that's a downside to that sort of gift.
Esports. You can get him. There's.
I was going to say that
already have one, like wireless headphones.
Yeah, maybe a wireless headset for his gaming rig, or even like we were talking about earlier, the stuff like the Amazon Echo or the Google Home, where you have, you know, it's a nice.
Smart dorm room would be cool, like an Amazon Echo with some Hue lights or something, some Hue Phillips lights, to where you could, you know, talk and turn on lights and turn off lights and stuff. But again, you could also with that. Unintended consequences with the ladies. I don't know.
Or,
get the music going.
Or intended.
Echo, play Barry White. Echo, dim lights. Echo, daughter-in-law. Yeah, I don't know if you want that.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. He was asking about, like, a wireless mouse, but...
That's like nothing.
That's like a stocking stuffer.
Would be faster, or are there good wireless mice?
Well, so no, there are some really nice high-end wireless mice for gaming. A lot of them, though, they're not wireless because, believe it or not, some gamers think that, hey, if I've got a wireline connection, that's, you know, one millionth of a millisecond faster, so that's going to let me own in whatever game I'm playing. So a lot of them are still kind of wired, but there's some really nice, solid, clunky, heavy mice out there that have, like, three lasers to calculate position, that have all kinds of macros, have all kinds of things built into it, even to the point where there are mice that are designed for certain kinds of games. If he's playing, like if he's into World of Warcraft, there's a World of Warcraft mouse that's dialed into where you can do all your spells and switching your apps and do everything like that from the mouse click. If he's into Fallout, I know there's like a Fallout mouse, you know, designed just for that. So it really kind of comes down to what game he's playing, but looking at like Razer, R-A-Z-E-R, is a cool brand. Corsair makes stuff, but yeah, there's, you can easily drop three figures on a mouse these days.
Really?
Oh yeah.
I did not
easily.
Know that. I did
and if
not
you,
know that.
Oh yeah, and if you want to take talk like keyboards easily too. You know, the gaming keyboards for the super metal nice looking things. It gets silly quickly. But that's a really cool gift too. You know, they come in really nice boxes, they light up, you know. And that pretty much, if you get him a really high-end gaming mouse, that's going to solidify that he's no daughter-in-law for the next 2 to 3 years.
Cred.
You're fine. Yeah.
Have credit school.
Yeah.
Street
yeah.
gaming cred.
I bought a Razer mouse a couple years ago, and he's been using that. It changes colors and all of that, but you wanted a wireless one. So.
Yeah, well, maybe that'd be a good option. You already know that he likes the Razer mouse. If he wants a wireless one, get him one of those high-end ones. Maybe do a little research and figure out if he's into a particular game or not and find out if there's one that's designed for that game.
Right. Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for your call. Hope that helps.
See you. Come on, bye.
All right. Bye. All right.
That's not bad to be in college and be about to be showered by electronica. You know, in the
will you be my dad?
Yeah. Are you adopting? Call back if you'd like to adopt any of the show staff.
I need a new dad. My dad's dead. So, and I'm not. And he never got me.
Were you
going
to play that card just to get? I guess Jay wins. Jay gets the drone, the VR, and the mouse.
He got your wireless mouse, but it was in a trap, and you had to take it out. But
all right.
You know, yeah, the thing that, you know, the interesting difference is, you know, back some years ago, young men knew all the details and could tell you all the stuff, like on a car. Oh, it's got a four-barrel carb and these headers and And now they can tell you what kind of switches they prefer on their mechanical keyboard. And,
oh, yeah.
And
Cherry MX Red.
Like
Cherry Red.
I mean, you just opened my eyes to – I mean, you know, the idea of PC gaming, though, is now kind of coming like into my – I don't do a lot of gaming anyway, but I like playing games in my living room, but now the idea of playing like with customized mouses and keyboards and I don't know. All right.
That may be one to wait and let VR get far enough
where
you can get a really good experience.
I played with Lee's VR setup, and it had some really cool stuff in it.
So this is cool. So this is how they're answering the latency on wireless mice, is a lot of the high-end wireless mice, they can go back and forth, dual mode. So you can go wired or wireless. So if you're just, you know, surfing to see what you're going to sign up for next semester, go wireless. But when it comes down to it, you know, FPV,
when
wired.
Squeeze in that last
And I like that. The buttons used to be very responsive. Now they're being made with hyper-response buttons. So that's, you know, definitely a step up from just normal buttons. So, you know, $100 extra, some hyper-responsive buttons. That's obviously worth it.
So, Flick, did I see the drone guy is called back in? Did it?
No, it's a different guy.
Oh, okay. Let's go to line three.
Line three to talk to Steve.
Steve, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, Jay. Hi, how are y'all doing?
Good.
That last call was a great one, especially for this time of year. Say I listened in a little bit on the drone talk, and y'all were discussing the fact that they might drop out of the air and the, you know, danger and so on and so forth. I've been flying for 5 years, and if you're interested in any of that stuff, I can answer questions and talk about what I've done with them and, you know, the status of it. And at first it was kind of illegal for business use, and that was kind of turned over by a case that Equistar should sue the FAA when they got a cease and desist letter.
Really?
For using drones. And so they found out that in the case that there was no law. It was just a memo from the government. And that prevented us from going to work for Monday Night Football about 4.5 years ago. And, you know, the lawyers looked at it. It was a vague area. And so basically the laws have always been the same. It's kind of like gun control. You have the same laws in effect, you know. We really stay away from airports and don't fly over private property without permission.
And don't go too high.
There's a lot of no-brainer stuff, but there's also a lot of no-brainer people buying drones suddenly or getting drones gifted on them or stuff like that. So you never underestimate. In fact, what would be really cool would be to come out Friday. Would be to come out to a Geek Gathering Friday at some point and bring a drone or something like that. Because we've got a lot of the people that come out to the Geek Gatherings would be interested in that. We've got a huge parking lot rooftop, you know, so... And I'm sure there'd be lots of people with questions, too.
Ours draw attention because they're not a small size. They're a medium platform. So our biggest one is an 8-blade, and it can haul 8 kilos, or a red cinema camera. And a 6-blade is the probably the best all-around size.
That's what I was talking about earlier, those ones that are just giant and carry the big cinematography rigs. And the red camera's no lightweight piece of equipment. And plus, you don't want to fly a red on an unreliable drone because the red is an expensive bit of camera kit.
I was gonna discuss how you make it through that. The person that is looking through the goggles seeing what the camera sees and the digital downlink.
What's the lag like? What's the delay like on that?
Oh, it's not bad. It's suitable for broadcast.
No, so live broadcast. I mean, you know, like if you're flying, I did the thing where I went to a Comic-Con and DJI had a thing where they had their Phantom set up, and they have that one where you put on the goggles and you can see what the drone sees.
You fly
right
over the bay.
Yeah.
You flew out over the bay.
They didn't let them fly out over the bay. They got shut down on that.
Oh.
So they were flying inside. They had rented a barge, and but they had to
just
fly
like over
inside,
the barge or something.
Over the barge, okay. Inside of a net. They had to last minute construct a net. It was really unfortunate because it would have been really cool. But there were some rogue drone flyers flying drones out over the bay.
And
there was one guy had a drone. It was rigged up. It had a red doghouse and Snoopy, the red baron, on it. It was flying around. It was pretty cool. But what I was wondering is, like, what's the reaction time if you're flying through those goggles and you're looking at it like that? Do you have to adjust for any kind of transmission lag?
That reaction time.
Yes.
Well, the way we do it is to we've got like a 67-page safety manual that was vetted. We were vetted by NASA. To use drones to inspect their aging facilities. But the way we work is the second person sees what the camera sees and turns and tilts the camera and turns the drone as well. And the first person is the
you know, the gas and the direction. And we have a third person that's the safety person.
Who's watching the actual drone fly?
Yeah, because you lose your orientation when you're wearing goggles.
Right.
And you could get vertigo a little bit until you get used to it.
Well, that all makes sense to me in terms of trying to do this professionally and trying to actually capture really useful video where you have 2- and 3-man teams flying. But as a hobbyist, I don't have, you know, 2 or 3 people to follow me around to help me with the hobby. So
they've added the sonar and all that stuff now.
Yeah.
The one that somebody mentioned that folds out looks just coming out looks incredible.
It does, and that's what I'm looking at for maybe my starter drone.
I'd get that even with what I already have. I mean, the ability to have unbelievably more technology than our 5-year-old drones.
And you can wear it on a belt pouch.
Yeah. and you know, one drone will pull its pods in so that its camera can turn 360 degrees and then like 120.
Right,
but
yeah.
A gimbal is another thing that you add on. And we found that we used mostly cheap cameras that were mechanically image stabilized rather than a digital stabilization. They seem to work out better than a GoPro or other types of stabilized or unstabilized cameras. Okay. So that was kind of neat.
Yeah. Well, cool. Thanks for the information. And if you ever do want to come out to a geek gathering and bring a drone.
That would be fun. You never know who you'll meet.
Yeah. And I like seeing them fly, and I'd like to see someone who knows what they're doing fly one, and I wouldn't mind seeing a really high-end one, and we could.
You've got a lot of photography geeks that'd be out there, too, that'd be interested, even if they're not purely dialed into drones. They
and
just like to
usually
see the rig.
Not always. But a lot of times there's some people that bring their kids, so we might be able to strap a small child to it.
Yeah, we've got some kids under, what do you say, 3K, 18K?
Well,
at least a small pet.
It's just a matter of time before somebody takes off with one, like they're sitting in a lawn chair connected to a bunch of helium balloons.
Danny Dick chair. That's awesome.
Drones.
All right,
souped up drone. Well, nice talking to you guys.
It was nice talking to you too. Thanks for the call.
Okay,
have a great
bye-bye.
Day. Bye.
I like the idea of the third person being, you know, safety officer / ERP bucket manager for the person they're wearing the goggles. That's
like
always good to have.
I like the idea of imagining Jay and his spouse traveling and group controlling a drone to take their pictures. No, over to the left. There's a test. You know, you can travel in a car with your spouse on a trip and you learn a lot about your relationship. Running a drone together, I have a feeling there's whole new areas you could explore.
Well, I was watching an F-Stoppers video, and they went to Iceland. And we're doing some drone photography there. And so if you go Google drone photography or video Iceland or those kind of places, there's some incredible stuff. They're flying it up over waterfalls, getting points of view that you would never get. But one thing they did that was really cool is they had this great shot. What they did is they had a guy in the back of the van with the back windows open or something, and he was piloting the drone and having it chase the van down these winding roads, and it was really cool. And I understand that some of the new drones now will actually kind of keep track of you or can be set to track, like on a device.
Oh, yeah, they'll follow you. Like, you can actually be a one-person team, go snowboarding, go whatever adventure sport X-ing you want, even motorcycles, too.
Right.
And with your cell phone, you know, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, tether it, and it'll go in chase mode and just, you know, keep you in frame,
well,
do all kinds of
if
stuff.
If you ever want to see what's possible with a drone, rewatch that OK Go video that they did with all drones.
Speaking of OK Go, did you see the new one?
I've heard about it. Oh,
they make really, really cool. Even if you don't like their music, go check out what they're doing on
video. The whole video was shot in about 5 seconds. But when you slowed it down, it played a minute and a half or 2 minute song, and it's just incredible. Anyway, let's get this last call since we've been asking people to call in, and they have called in. We want to make sure we get them on the air, so this will probably be our last call of the evening. Who is it?
Some call him Tim.
Hello, Tim. You're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello, guys. I am calling about Cody. Does anyone know about Cody?
Open source.
I know Commander Cody and the Lost Planet Airmen, but that's a little.
Is it the home theater stuff by any chance?
Yeah.
A little bit. I don't have a lot of hardware. I look at it a little bit, but my stuff is more smart than high end. at this point. What do you know about it?
I know very little. I was hoping y'all would know more. I just know that you can put most of your information on it, and you can even carry it on Android, and I have it on an Android box, and I watch it on TV. But
what is coding again?
It looks kind of neat. So if you think of, like, Plex crossed with the TiVo, crossed with they haven't quite got into the smart home area yet, but it's kind of like, you know, smart theater kind of stuff.
Okay.
It's like a set-top box that does all kinds of video, like a Plex, but on top of that, it'll record and do some other things.
Okay, so
like
it's
that
like
too.
A TV replacement or a set-top box replacement that you run on your computer. So does it accept input from cable?
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff.
Okay. Correct.
Okay, I don't know much about it, but I've been aware of some software technologies like that where people have, you know, created or tried to create some technology that you run on your computer that basically allows you to control the channels on your cable or even broadcast and then also be able to DVR and things like that.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Like, you can install it on, for instance, like a Raspberry Pi. So there's, you
is
know, like
C-O-D?
Xbox.
Yeah, Raspberry Pi.
Is it CODY?
KODY. KODI.TV to go get some intel on it. Like, for instance, there's the Xbox controller, the XBMC, which came out for Raspberry Pi that you can install on there. It's like that. You can install, for instance, you can even do a Plex server on a Raspberry Pi. But this is kind of along those lines because you've got multiple inputs. You've got HDMI out. You know, you can do a little bit of stuff on it for really cheaply, too.
If you have an Android phone, just type in Kodi in Google Play and download it. The other thing was VR, just get Google Cardboard and try it out before you go into the thousands to $5,000 range of video watching and touching and all that.
See if you're one of the percentage of people that can't handle it.
Yeah, that'd be really horrible to find out, like, okay, my equilibrium is just not cut out
for
it.
You spent $1,000 and you're vomiting all over the
cardboard's
place.
Cool. And then if you really like cardboard and you want to step up, you can also go, are they calling it, I think I've got one, I should know this, Daydream. It's like a, you know, like two-figure set that just, it's just like a nice version of cardboard. It's a nice little feather.
Yeah,
kind
if
of
you
thing.
Want to go plastic, right?
Yeah.
More or less, yeah. It's just a nice version of cardboard. But you don't need
exactly.
much. You've got all the computer power you need in your smartphone, so why not just use that? That's all it does. It just cuts your smartphone down half in two, and you just need to, you know, isolate
and
your
you,
eyes.
You
and
can find
there.
Plenty of VR apps that are designed for cardboard that can
exactly.
work on any of those.
And the nice thing is, I want to say, like, Oculus got together with Google, who got together with PlayStation, and more or less just a couple days ago, they came out and they said, hey, we're going to do a VR consortium. So Google at the helm, you know that Google stuff is going to be folded in there.
Yeah. The other thing was about Droid, my brain's not working.
Reboot.
Thank you. VR connected to Droid.
Oh, yeah, like drawing apps. I've heard that there's some cool drawing stuff where you can actually draw in 3D space and be very artistic and stuff like that.
No, VR with Droid.
Oh,
so
Droid.
You're looking through like an Oculus and you're outside flying it without looking at it.
Oh, the drone.
Drone. Gotcha,
thank
gotcha,
you.
Drone.
God.
That was the drone you were looking for.
It's not quite there. I jokingly showed up on a motorcycle, you know, and parked it and then very quickly put on VR things and said, look, this is way too laggy. I can't do this again. And people actually said, whoa, you did that? I was like, yes, I did do that. So we're not there yet, but at some point soon. We are out of time.
Tim, thanks for your call tonight. And maybe you'll
sorry about
next...
that.
That's all right.
Well, have a nice night.
All right,
okay, interesting
too,
call.
All right, well, that was in keeping with last week's experience a little bit. There had some interesting calls.
Hopefully some drones will show up
don't
at Geek Gathering sometime
soon. Don't
want
to jinx it, but there was not a single spyware call in that whole batch. I know.
It was spyware on drones. That's going to be ugly. Just say, hey, drones, come to me. And then suddenly you've got a lot of drones, no. Assuming you're within battery range.
No,
different kind of DDoS.
I'm anxious for this drone to come out, and I'm getting excited about the possibility of getting it and at least playing with it and doing some drone photography, but also the idea that it could be not taking me too much over my weight limit when traveling and being something I could manage, especially if I lighten up my camera lid. Okay, well, that music tells us we got to get going, so we're going to get going. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
And I'm Barrett.
And we'll hopefully see Groovehouse and Lee next week, if we're lucky. We don't know who's going to miss next week. It could be anyone. Maybe you. All right. We'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in.
What does it look like when leaders from different faiths work together for social change? See for yourself at 7 p.m. on Thursday, December 15th at the Rothko Chapel. The nonprofit dedicated to social justice is hosting Houston's Faith Elders, Social Justice, Social Change in the Presence of the Divine. This conversation with Rabbi Samuel Karf, Reverend William Lawson, and Archbishop Joseph Fiorenzo will be moderated by award-winning journalist Melanie Lawson. The three professional clergy have worked together on social justice issues around Houston for decades. The event will offer a window into their interfaith work and a glimpse into how those efforts have influenced their personal spirituality and ministry. Rabbi Karf is Rabbi Emeritus at Congregation Beth Israel. Reverend Lawson is the founding pastor of Wheeler Avenue Baptist Church. And Archbishop Fiorenza is Archbishop Emeritus of Galveston, Houston. The Rothko Chapel is located at 3900 Yupon, KPFT, Houston.
You may have been in your car looking for news coverage or some new music. Maybe you were at home flipping the dial looking for something different. Your radio may have settled on KPFT and stayed there. If you're new to this station, here's how community radio works. We rely on listeners, not advertisers, for the money that we use to operate our station. We hold membership drives a few times a year, and we ask for you to support our work with a pledge. If you give a call to 713-526-4000 and ask for the membership department, you can pledge an amount of your choice to support KPFT. You've come to rely on us, but we rely on you. That's 713-526-4000. Ask for the membership department and support KPFT.